I did look at the comments, and of course you only ever remember the one bad one that said I look terrible, and then you forget all the previous ones that said that they were glad to have us back. So yeah, and it was nice. I was heartened, I think.
I think most people are
and I didn't even tweet it out that much. Actually, I don't think I tweeted it out at all. I should have, but I think it seems to get its own traffic, so that's a good experiment.
It does. It does get its. It seems to move independent of anything of promotion or. I think, what is it, about 20 grand? 20,000?
Views.
Yeah. Getting that. Well,
I think you doubled that. Some of them are that way, but I would say it sits on 10, actually. But that's,
I don't know. Look, I'm very down on the underestimation because, and I actually blame Toby for this.
Because
there were definitely 500,000 people at that march, at least 500,000. And you just have to look at the photo, the footage.
Yes.
I'm sure there must be some software that does counting. And I'm amazed that I'm not going to do it because I'm useless. Hello.
Yes, yes.
But other people, we've got sort of wonks and people who understand these things. They ought by now to have got their shit together and use software because it's really important.
Yes.
Because that event was completely airbrushed out of history by the media. There was the incident at the end where clearly there was an agent provocateur, probably working for the police or working for some hard left organization like Antifa, who wanted to provoke injuries, actually. I mean, that's what they wanted, footage of police women in particular having blood trickling down their face, and they got it, and they also got their news story. But just going back to the numbers, I was sort of almost bullied, actually. I mentioned that it was probably more than 50, and Toby said, oh, you don't know, you've got to be careful with your estimations, says you. Yeah, of course you're going to think it's big, so you play things down. And actually, the more I think about it, the more cross I am.
Yes.
Anyway.
I'm just going on the views that, YouTube say, whether they're underestimating it or not. In terms of crowd numbers, I think it's notoriously difficult to count crowd numbers, right? Unless they're in a stadium and you know how many seats there are.
Yeah, well, that's true. There is a software that you can do down.
Sure. Yes. Well, if you can do it by software, but I think just an individual looking down at a picture is it's very difficult.
Well, except, hang on, there are lots of unemployed teenagers right now kicking around at home. Somebody must have some teenagers that can just go. Maybe they can, smoke a spliff while they do it to make it. No, actually, that would mess up their counting, wouldn't it? Yeah. But apart from that, Laura, the great news is that everything's back to normal, and the government is clearly, it knows what it's doing, and it's really great. You know what I'm really pleased about?
Mm-hmm.
I'm really pleased that they're starting to vaccinate pregnant women, because I really think it's important that we control population.
I saw this is a great
way of doing it.
I saw this push, and it's obviously unusual for a news story to apply to so specifically. You're looking at it and you're just, they pushed it in the Mail, I think, and they pushed it somewhere. And then I saw an article in The Guardian saying that there was an increase in maternal deaths in Brazil. And of course, if you're in my position, you obviously, the first instinct is always to do what you can to protect your unborn child. So obviously part of you thinks, well, maybe I should get vaccinated. And again, you're just like, it's so blatant, this push. And as I always say, I just, when people talk to me about the vaccine, I just apply the simple principle of prudence, which I think is a virtue. Actually, I think that's a Christian virtue. And it's like, look, my line is always, I barely drink caffeinated tea. I am not taking a vaccine that has been around for 2 seconds, and they clearly could not have, if they've tested on pregnant women, it's got to be about 2, right? Because it's only been out for 9 months, right? So you haven't even you haven't even gotten the full sort of gestational period. Who are they testing it on? Because it's only been out for what, a year or two? So you don't know what happened to the child in 5 years' time.
No.
Right. And that's before I delved into the statistics on whether it does cause miscarriage or stuff. I just start from the very basic premise of, yeah, you know, I can't take alcohol. I reduce my coffee intake. I'm not going to take your vaccine that's been around for 2 seconds, no, because it's
which
just
isn't a vaccine.
Exactly. Especially the weird RNA one, because you can't tell me, yo, it's fine, and it's fine. I'm pregnant women, but it's always the phrase that's used is there is no evidence to show. Okay, there's no
that's
evidence
right.
to show.
It's the weasel formula.
Yeah. Well. Okay, there is no evidence to show, because again, it's been out for 20 seconds. Oh yeah, and then there was another piece in the Irish media also saying that, you know, and again, you're just aware of the manipulating statistics. So there was a number of, say, stillborn births, and there was COVID in the placenta or something. And again, you're thinking, okay, that's obviously a tragedy, but it may well be that those children were stillborn for a different reason, and the mothers had contracted COVID, didn't have a clue whether they had it or not, and you found it in the placenta. You may have, or the umbilical cord, you may have found lots of other things in that. It doesn't, I do yeah. know the basics of causation, and you're not giving me enough to take this. Now, look, if I was a healthcare worker and I was genuinely exposed to COVID like all the time, my calculation may well be different. But the life I lead... No, I know. But look, I can just say, you know, with the life I lead now, where my exposure to COVID is 0.00001%, and anyway, it probably won't affect me. You just stop bamboozling me. I'm not at risk. I'm not going to start getting paranoid about being at risk. And I would imagine doing simple, you know, scientific calculations, taking this crazy vaccine will put me in a lot more risk than... the silly COVID. Anyway, they're saying that there's, I mean, I haven't checked my area, but I mean, the rates, even on their overbaked estimate, are right down. But yeah, no, I have seen yes. the subtle push. It's not very subtle at all.
No.
But yeah.
No, it's not. And it's, I want to, I'm going to read you in a moment
go on.
Letter,
Jeremy,
that I had from a midwife, a community midwife. I'm sure she won't mind as long as I hide the details. Because lots
yeah.
I'm planning on talking to a whistleblower later okay. on today, somebody who works in an NHS doctor's practice, and which is also a vaccine centre. And she tells me they have been getting, I think she said 2,000 calls a day
wow.
from people who've had adverse reactions mm-hmm. and want to know what to do. And she said the doctors in the practice are, they spend most of the time reassuring relatives whose loved ones have died after taking the vaccine that it had nothing to do with the vaccine. And there's loads of people with all manner of symptoms, which they're not reporting because,
yeah.
well, there's only one doctor in the practice who's recording it. The others are just pretending it's not happening. Which is a bit frightening. Did you hear, by the way, my podcast with Naomi Wolf?
No, although I knew you'd bring it up. Yeah, go on.
Yeah.
Give me the pitch. I might watch it.
Unlikely.
I don't care the living daylight out of me. Go on.
Unlikely podcast. It started off kind of awkward because Naomi clearly didn't know who I was, and I went into a spiel about how, you know, like, I could never imagine having a feminist like you on my podcast. And, you know, I always used to get you confused with Naomi Klein. You know, what's the yes. difference? Naomi Wolf, Naomi Klein. And I think maybe she found my bluntness a bit off-putting. And also, well, I think she thought I was trying to trick her. But once she settled down and realized I was her friend,
yes.
Or ally, she just gave it both barrels. I mean, she's very, very dark. She's very, very dark on what's happening to this country in particular. I mean, I think the only worst places, Ireland is I think about as bad as it gets.
Ireland is
the Commonwealth countries.
Insane.
Canada and Australia and New Zealand seem to be like test cases for just how far they can go.
Yeah.
But being as a speciality as feminism, she was particularly good on the what it's doing to women. And she was talking about, she's been given reports from lots of women, sort of, yeah, crowdsourcing, if you like, on their reactions to the so-called vaccine, which isn't a vaccine. And what she's heard is that people who've had the menopause have started, yes, having periods again.
I've heard this.
People who haven't had the menopause, you know, normal periods have been horribly disrupted.
Yeah.
Miscarriages, the lot. And so the idea that,
yeah,
Her Majesty's Daily Mail, I mean,
yes,
is that right? The Daily Mail is pushing this.
It definitely had an article on it. It's not sort of wall to wall. I definitely saw a pro article, certainly not anti.
Because this is one of the things that really shocks me. You know, that piece I wrote for Conservative Woman, which seemed quite well, about the failure of the media. And if you had to think about what it is that our tabloids do, traditionally have done, there's the one strand of sort of shocking the readership with scandals and prurience about people's love lives and stuff. But there's another part which is very much to do with looking after the reader's interests, you know, championing causes.
Yes.
And you would have thought that the default position of the Mail would be, we don't want your pregnant daughters to miscarry.
Yes.
Wouldn't you? You'd have thought, we don't want your child to die of vaccine poisoning. We don't want your wife to die of cancer untreated. You'd have thought these were givens. And yet, what we're seeing is a complete sort of abdication of all responsibility for the well-being of the readers. And instead, what they're doing is they're pushing a government narrative,
yep,
get the vaccine at all costs, which is very questionable. And no, the newspapers aren't questioning it.
Yes. I mean, look, the you know, previous newspapers, the Sunday Times obviously broke the thalidomide story. You know, there's so many, there's got to be so much corruption in this. I mean, I saw another tweet as well that they bought like billions of vaccines, or like just the number of vaccines, yeah, the UK government has actually bought is just incredible. I mean, why? They're not even questioning the testing regime, which is another racket, right? Why do I need three tests coming in from a green country if I'm also vaccinated twice? I mean, so there's lots of angles they could do. And yes, as you've said, they've chosen not to. They've completely adopted the narrative. They love running, you know, human interest stories on how bad COVID might have affected someone. You very rarely see anything on how the vaccine might have affected someone. In fact, when a solicitor died, a young guy, not in his 20s, but say in his 40s.
Yeah.
The line was, the family had run, he's unfortunate, was really unlucky, please still get the vaccine. That was the line.
Yes, with this is narrative. I think we're all agreed, those of us on our side of the argument, that one can no longer trust one's GP practice. One can't trust anything that the NHS says. There's a watershed moment we've long since passed where the rules have completely changed. The Hippocratic, yep, oath, you know, first do no harm, seems to have been
abandoned. Also, even they've obviously made the calculation, and I mean, this calculation is always present, I think, in public health, in that, you know, if you look, there's always going to be some people who will die or be badly affected by a vaccine. Now, I agree that this vaccine may be unique in terms of the amount of damage it could cause. But as a matter of public health, those people are expendable, right? Because you're going to save whatever the other
that's the theory
of people. So that's the theory of every single vaccine. So it may well be that the papers are just sort of applying that kind of calculation. I just think they're desperate to get out of this. You know, I just think they're desperate to get out of this. The readers are dead, and everybody thinks it won't be me, right?
It won't be me
who gets badly affected. That's, you know.
I think, When you realize that the government has allocated another 320 million of media spending, yes, that buys an awful lot of compliance on the newspaper's part. And you must have heard of journalists trying to get stories into the papers about vaccine casualties or whatever, stories that are detrimental to the government's narratives, and have been unable to do so. The newspapers are not running these stories at all.
Yes. Yeah.
That's the worry. I've just found this letter from a community midwife. It's really
interesting.
I am the only person in my department who is saying no to lateral flow tests and no to the jab. The pressure has ramped up more this week since we've been told to offer the jab to our pregnant women. This is a community midwife.
Yeah.
I asked what we should be saying about the risks, and the reply was that the RCOG, Royal College of Gynecologists, have said it's fine between 14 and 28 weeks of pregnancy. Where do they get this information from? Because I've heard is that it's not good. At a meeting I went to, no one was aware of the number of miscarriages linked to the jab on the MHRA yellow card reporting website when I brought it up. They just looked at me blankly before continuing to say, well, miscarriages happened, and how do they know it was because of the jab? I'm feeling so despairing. I don't know how much longer I can continue to work in the NHS, but if I leave, who is going to tell women of the risks?
Yeah, well, of course she should stay. We had this last week. She should stay and mention the risks calmly. No, I mean, actually, interestingly, none of my various appointments have said anything to me. I'm going to wait and see if they do. I have a sense that they may not, actually.
They're frightened of.
No. I think there's a lot more midwives like that out there, and I think they're just not going to. But I could be wrong. Anyway, 28 weeks. I'm at about 20. So if they don't get me the next day. Well, anyway, they're not getting me anyway. But
I bet they'll try.
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
Nora, as a man, I spent the last, well, probably since my teens.
Yes.
So that's what, 40 odd years spent being bored rigid by this tremendous this culture where everything is about women and women's health and women's rights and women's whatever.
And
I don't understand is how we can go from that, you know, like women are the most important thing, their physical health and their pregnancies and like are really sensitive and important and their emotions, from that to, we don't give a toss about, they can all die and their babies can die and we don't give a shit. What's happened to our culture that you have that transformation so rapidly?
Well, I just think this is collateral damage. You know, I mean, they've made the calculation that this is collateral damage. They will always fall back on there is no evidence to show, or you can't link it directly to the vaccine, right? I know that. They love linking it directly to COVID. That calculation takes 2 seconds, right? But if they will never link it, you can't show it's directly to the vaccine. I don't know. But I mean, it depends on how dark you want to get. And this is probably where I would differ with Naomi Wolf. You know, and I saw the NHS running a clip. They had some lady in a hijab saying, don't worry, you know, it won't affect your fertility. And again, just on the basis of basic prudence, you're just like, I don't see how you can say that. You haven't, there's no long-term studies on this. It hasn't been around for 5 years. How can you say that? So, or to use the phrase, there's no evidence that it will not impact your fertility. I think you can say that. Anyway, but look, this, if you wanted to come over to my particular dark side, for a lot of people and a lot of this culture, if you said to them, here's a vaccine, oh, by the way, it might make you infertile, a lot of people will be like, I'll take that bet. Right? I mean, that sounds about
it. What, to go to Ibiza?
Yeah, exactly.
Or to
yeah, they don't. Because, I mean, the fertility rate is already, well, I'm not sure about the UK, but in a lot of European countries, it's already below replacement level, right? And that's out of choice. So Italy is way below replacement level. Spain is below replacement level. And even the liberal countries, they're both Catholic countries, allegedly, right? And same with Denmark, even the Nordic and Swedes, the Nordic countries. So a lot of women make themselves semi-permanently, if you want, infertile for about, what, let's say 15 years of their life, from 20 to 35, maybe from 15 to 35, right? So they're actually used to being in an infertile state. So I'm not sure. Okay, it is true, of course, eventually the majority still want to have a child or two. But, you know, when that's there in the background, is it that much of a leap to, and especially if you question millennial women now, a lot of them are like 50-50 on the kid thing at all, right? I mean, it's not a priority for them. So if you told them you're going to get cancer from this, that would raise alarm bells, right? But
what about it might turn you racist? Then you'd never take it. I mean, that would be the worst thing, wouldn't it?
Exactly.
Or it made you Islamophobic or homophobic.
I'm not saying they would all take it if they knew for sure they were infertile. I think there's a subconscious level there where it's just maybe it's not that big a loss. You know, it's difficult to say.
Laura, I think you are wiser than you realize, or you're more on the button and down the rabbit hole than you realize, because my view of the of what's going on, it's a tiny part of a much bigger plan, which has to do with depopulation, which has to do with destroying the culture, destroying the traditional relationship between men and women, you know, destroying the purpose of marriage and procreation, just generally turning us into, and tied in with this is, I think we mentioned this last week, vegetarian food and vegan food. You know, how I've noticed that for as long as I can remember, newspapers' health pages have been running articles about how, oh yes, have a little bit of meat, but not too much, and have your 5-a-day vegetables. And this has gradually been ramped up over time to have meat maybe twice a week, but no more, because meat is bad. You know, meat gives you cancer. Have more, and then we've moved on to this. Have no meat at all. We're going to call it plant-based food. We're not going to call it vegan, because vegan sounds nasty. We're going to call it plant-based, and suddenly you're going to buy this bullshit. So we've had this progression away from meat, and this is entirely artificial. I mean, it's dishonest. It's unscientific. It's as unscientific as Ansel Keys saying that fat is bad for you. This has been going on for ages.
No, I agree.
We've been weakened. We've been our immune systems have been weakened. We're not behaving as our bodies are designed to do, because of all these cultural influences which have come from somewhere, and I think they've come from the same people pushing this whole corona bollocks.
I mean, Bill Gates, you know, the same people that were really worried that lots of people who've already reached the average age of life, right, past 80, are going to die, have been complaining for 10 years, well, 20 years in some case, that the earth is overpopulated. You know, it's just a difficult thing to buy. I don't agree that there is an ulterior, I think there is an ulterior motive, if that's their stance. It, you know, basically they won't be happy until we're all living in Wendy House size houses, preferably alone.
Which we don't own.
Yeah, which we don't own.
They own.
With no children, not married, and are eating squirrels and roadkill and insects. They do push the insect thing a lot. I think that's to do with people degrading themselves and again, people humiliating themselves without actually knowing it. You know, you're supposed to be really happy that you're eating a chocolate covered grasshopper or some nonsense. It's all part of the same scheme. People should eat more meat. We're going to have a roast beef today, actually. Eat more meat, eat more dairy if you can. Do the exact opposite of whatever the elite are telling you, and you should be
totally
fine. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. Everything yeah. they say is just designed to hurt us. And I, by the way, have you been? I've noticed that so many people are sleepwalking into this disaster. So many people are not like us. I mean, look, one of the best things about all this is that it's introduced me to people who I think are the best of Britain. Okay. And they come from all walks. Well, you're one of them.
Yes.
They come from all walks of life. And I met them on the march, and they are absolutely fantastic. And it doesn't seem to break down by race or by class or anything. You just get all sorts, but they all have that quality, which I think is the essence of what makes our country great. This kind of they're funny, they're phlegmatic, they're commonsensical. That's a word. They are. They just don't take bullshit. They just don't want, you know, they're not having it. But so many people. So I went to this posh person's party the other night.
Ooh.
And they'd all had the jab, and they were just feeling great about it. And they knew that everything was going to come back soon. It was all going to be all right. And they were really looking forward to it. And it was as if everything that's happened in the last 18 months was normal. And it's as if everything that's happening now is normal. It's all going to be okay.
Mm.
And did you see on I didn't see this, but on Richie Allen's show, one of his guests said that people who've had the jab become slightly sort of zombified, and he likened it to have you read the Philip Pullman books?
No. Oh no, he's anti-Christian.
He is anti-Christian. Yeah, and I don't like that about him, and I think actually God is going to make him go in hell, obviously. But Satan will reward him for having written a pretty compelling read otherwise. Anyway, so but have you glimpsed it on TV?
I mean, I've heard of them, his dark materials and all that stuff. Yeah. Okay. And keep the kids well away
so
from
it's,
it.
So it's shite, as you would say in Ireland. But it's short. But particularly the BBC version. The film version was actually not so bad, but the BBC version was just absolutely, giant. But the charming thing about the book is that the characters have demons. They're not like they're like little diamonds, DAEMONS, and they're little. What they are is they're familiars.
Okay.
And you normally have a familiar, which is the opposite sex to what you are. So you probably, I don't know what your familiar would be. What would your demon be, do you think?
Someone handsome tempting me. I don't know. Yeah.
No, they're animals. They're animal spirits.
Oh.
You can't have a human.
I don't know. I don't know.
A vampire bat.
Okay. Yeah, that could be good.
It'd be quite cool, actually. Yeah. Okay. So your vampire bat, and you talk to your vampire, your pet vampire bat. He's probably got a name, like he's probably called Seamus or Fergus or something like that from your culture.
Yeah.
And Seamus or Fergus, the vampire bat. You talk to him, and he's your friend, and he's there from anyway. And I've got a similar one. I've got a jaguar, maybe. Ooh. No, a wolf. I've got a wolf.
Right.
I've got a female wolf.
Yes.
It was called Wolfina.
Okay.
Anyway. No, I've got a wolf. And what this guy said is it's a bit like when you've had the jab, you've had your demon cut off. Anyway, this none of this makes any sense to you if you haven't seen it.
I thought you were going to say to me the demon gets stronger and is sort of, is tempting them further. That's, I wouldn't have...
No, they're not like that. Because you think of demons because you're a Catholic.
Yes,
these are kind of nice demons. They're friendly demons. Mm. They're like your little, they're like your imaginary friend.
Oh, right. Okay. So you didn't use the word demon, which implied.
I agree. But that's because of the spelling.
Yeah. No, I thought maybe you'd say that people who are vaccinated have, as the wokesters also have, you know, it gives them incredible moral license to, they feel superior, you know, they feel better, But I don't know. I mean, look, most of the moms at the school are getting it, and my parents have got it. And, you know, I do. They all know my position because, as we spoke about last week, which did come up in the comments a lot, I'm not part of the silent majority. It will be interesting. I was going to say there was something about demons or silent majority or tempting. Now it's gone out of my head again. How irritating. Well, this is just a very sidebar or a segue. So sometimes now and again, if I'm feeling bored, I go on to Mum's Net, which should be called Karen's Net.
Bet that's post. Good sport.
I just stalk. And
It's called lurking.
Lurking, yeah. And there's a section called Am I Being Unreasonable? And there's so much comedy in a way. And it usually consists of things like my mother-in-law, and it's incredibly demanding, just unbelievably overbearing mother-in-law making ridiculous demands. You know, like she wants to come down on day one the baby is born and take over. And you know what I also know I notice is how wimpy the husbands are. So my default position would obviously be that the husband should protect the wife. Okay, I'm not saying, you know, you throw your mom under the bus or anything, but you should form a barrier around the new mother and be like, you know what, we'll call you. Let's give her some space. But it's always like, oh no. I mean, one of them was like, the mother-in-law wants to take my bed and I would have to sleep on the sofa bed, like with the baby. Like this is the kind of stuff you get on there. And you're just like, wow.
I tell you what, thanks for that.
Yeah.
What you've just gone and done is added more activities. Yeah. More activities for my day to waste time looking at a bloody screen.
I haven't even got to it, but this is the kind of what I would call boomer entitlement. Anyway, there's a mom on there. She lives in France. She really wants to see her mother, who's in the UK. She has a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old. The mother, the UK living mother, has been double vaccinated, right? So it's bulletproof, right, if you're to believe Boris Johnson, but doesn't want to come to France because it's too risky. So the mom is like, should I go back to the UK with my two kids? And the mother wanted her to quarantine in like a travel lodge for 10 days before they even visit her. Her double vaccinated mother. Of course, now at least everybody was just like,
sounds reasonable to me.
Everyone was just like, what the hell is wrong with you? Why would you do that? She is crazy. And I mean, I would, you know, imagine making a demand like that on your own daughter and your two grandkids. But it is, I'm sorry, because I like to give them a kick. It's because it's a boomer Karen who's probably hit, you know, no, who would snitch on her neighbors and during the last 18 months. And everybody must wear a mask. And also, I want my 2-year-old grandchild to quarantine in a hotel for 10 days before they come and see me. I mean,
okay.
I
agree. It's insane. And it's apparently insane. The 77th Brigade, you know, the government's propaganda department that we pay for with our taxes.
Yes.
They're useless kind of gimps that aren't even fit to be cannon fodder sit on their keyboards and they lurk in places like Mum's Net.
No.
And they steer the narrative. Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely.
No.
They are they are so low grade. But if you don't know the telltale signs, you possibly could.
Responses were like, "Don't even think about it. Don't be crazy." But yeah, it gives.
That's good.
Yeah, yeah.
That's good. What I've noticed about I mentioned the good things about these times that it's brought good people together, but also. It has revealed so many people who would have made really good Nazis, or not necessarily they would have been actually running Auschwitz, but they would definitely have been like, yeah, whatever. Look, we've got it. Once we've sorted out the Jews, things will be fine. You know,
we
should stop making a fuss about it.
Yeah.
This is quite a leap from Jews to contemporary Britain, but my dad went to this restaurant the other day with my sister, and there were more in their party than were able to fit into one kind of legal bubble.
It's still six,
whatever.
I think. Yeah.
So six. And the in order to make things harder for them, the manager of the restaurant deliberately sat the parties way apart so that they couldn't, you know, there's no danger of communication. And my dad made the mistake of going over to speak to the other table before he left.
Ooh.
And my sister went to the loo inside without a mask but without her lanyard, and she said to the waitress, "Look, do you mind if I go in without I've got my lanyard in the car?" I mean, I don't know why she even bothers with the lanyard. I'd just say I'm mask yeah. exempt and have done with it. But anyway, the waitress was really, really unhappy about this. And then the manager tried to accost her, and she said, "Look, I need the loo, if you don't mind." And she thought, why am I being crazy. Chased around by yeah. the manager of a restaurant trying yeah. to lecture, trying to tell me off? You know, that's not what I come to eat for. And so anyway, at the end of the lunch, after he'd paid, my father was confronted by the tearful, apparently he was almost in tears, the manager. And I wish I could name the hotel. My dad doesn't want to name it. I think it should be named in shame. It's in Malvern anyway. There's lots in Malvern. And the manager said, you must never come back here again. And I was thinking, this is basically what we're seeing now is the emergence of a kind of capo culture. You know, the capos in the concentration camps where yeah. they were Jewish prisoners who took the role of the Nazis. And this is what we're doing. We are building our own concentration camps. We are building our own prison through our behavior. That manager of that restaurant is not helping anyone by behaving in this ridiculous manner to his customers. All he's doing is surrendering more and more of our traditions and our culture and our common sense to this behemoth, this out of control state, which wants to take away all our freedoms and to make us paranoid. And this guy is acting as his useful idiot. And there are so many of these people around,
yes.
so many people who are letting our country be destroyed because through their complacence and through their compliance. That's the really shaming thing. We don't have to obey the government, but we are so doing it.
No, I know. And this is the thing, is because, you know, the hospitality industry, you know, everyone's saying it's been really tough on them. Actually, they lost that legal case where they said they wanted to open earlier. And I mean, on the one hand, I have a lot of sympathy for them. But on the other hand, I do think, well, you guys really went along with this. You know, you put up very little opposition, even verbally. So I just... you know, my sympathy is limited for them. You know, I was looking, we're going away at the end of June, I think. And I was looking up restaurants to where we're going. And you know, they were all, a lot of it was like, we're COVID secure. But one in particular was, you know, we take the temperature of everybody as they go in. And I'm like, well, I'm not going there. You know, but to a lot of people would be like, I'll go there because, you know, they're super safe.
Funny you say that. I don't mind so much the temperature thing. I mean, when our gym was open, which hasn't been for ages, they used to bleep your forehead with a temperature. I mean, it's when they start sort of trying to give you an anal swab when you go in that I might start drawing the line. But you're right. You want to be in a restaurant with as few bedwetters in it as possible. So I would go for the, we are dangerous. We flout COVID restrictions.
Well, we want,
opportunity.
We talked about that before, right? That can we have those pubs, please? And then all of the people that were at your march can go to them.
Where the chef doesn't wash his hands.
And where when they spit into your soup, you welcome it. You're charged extra for that. Yeah, I know. No, it's sad to see. But as I said, this goes down to the whole, it's a similar thing with the whole awoke agenda, right? In that people have gone along with this for ages. And I have to talk about it because it's absolutely critical. Whenever anybody says, you know, I don't want to say anything or I don't want to raise anything. That is, as you said, compliance. It's not just not opposition. You are actually complying. Because we were talking about this. So did you hear about
collaboration?
Did you hear about the software company in America that were like, take your woke agenda elsewhere, people? Did you hear about this?
No.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It was, well, if someone wrote an opinion piece on it in the Times today, it was actually quite good. It was not rubbish. So
in the Times, I doubt this.
Yeah, no, it was there. Well, he made a good point in that people are now looking to companies for moral direction, whereas before it would be the church, which is completely right. So there's this software company in America, I forget what they were called, it's quite kind of a funky name. And they sent out an email to the employees. Someone either said something to them, but the reply was, look, listen, okay, we make software for project management. We make, you know, email software for project management. We are not here to solve the world's problems. All the time that you're spending, you know, online, on social media, pushing various agendas is time away from your job. Okay, so we're not going to do that. And sort of, please don't do it. Okay, of course, this caused, you know, uproar. And supposedly a third of the employees walked. Okay, now so far the company have, yes, exactly, the company have held strong, right? They haven't issued one of those terrible groveling apologies, those awful apologies, and they still stay fired. I think they've stuck to it, and now they have, you know, they have to fill the positions, hopefully with people who are actively productive. And, you know, the thing is, I mean, first of all, you say, well done, company. Okay, we need more of those, and conservatives need to support more of those if they ever existed in the UK. But also, I think it's interesting in terms of what our opposition is, particularly in terms of the woke agenda. You know, that's a third of the employees who are willing to actually, I don't agree with their politics, but they're actually willing to walk out of their jobs for this, right? And when you were saying last week about your civil servant who was like, oh, I'm better off where I am, whereas a lot of people, what I'm saying is a lot of people on our side aren't even willing to say the words, I disagree with you, right? These guys, so this is the left play for keeps. They mean it. You know, when they say we want to rearrange the culture, we want to change the school curriculum, we want to literally change your physical environment by tearing down various statues. You don't need someone on the right to say, oh, you know, they used to claim that we were hysterical. No, just listen to what they are saying they want to do and believe them. That you don't have to analyze it. You don't even have to use a slippery soap argument. And these are regular Joes who've walked off that job, James. They're not like, you know, say people in the media who sometimes benefit from adverse publicity, right?
I think I've spotted the flaw in your argument.
Oh.
The flaw in your argument is this, that there are actually no consequences. If you're a leftist and you quit a job because your employer has been insufficiently woke.
Yes.
You're going to walk straight into another job. What happened in your last job? Oh, well, I walked out on a point of moral principle. Oh, what was the point of moral principle?
Yeah.
Well, they misgendered somebody. And you know, oh, my God, they misgendered somebody. Well, come to our company. We are woke is us.
But the reason
you would not get the same. A conservative who gets sacked from their job for being conservative, that's it. It's game over for them. That's the difference.
The reason for that is because so many are part of the silent majority, right? In that, say, the next company the conservative worker goes to thinks the majority of their employees are wokesters, when that may not be the case, because the non-wokesters have self-censored. You see what I mean? So we could, you know, you can go around in circles in terms of what really makes a conservative or a woke company. Is it the employees and their views, or is it the company policy? But I can tell you what, it self-censoring has an impact. The idea that I'm just going to kind of keep my head down and it won't, the culture war may not be interest. You may not be interested in the culture war, but the culture war sure as hell is interested in you, because one day it will come knocking for something you actually care about. So that was my first rage about. Yeah. So as I said, it's the worst possible thing you can do is self-censor. Oh, yeah. And this is the thing is in companies now, and I touched on this last week, you know, you get into trouble for assuming someone's gender. But people seem to be allowed to assume your political views, right, all the time. I'm just going to assume you're on the left. I'm going to assume you think Biden is great. And if you dare say, well, actually, I don't really like President Biden, or I think the lockdown was wrong, then, you know, you're going to be in big trouble. Well, first of all, you probably won't be in big trouble. And secondly, the two people standing behind you probably agree with you. So, you know, as I said before, I'm not saying everybody needs to walk out of their job. Obviously, people, you know, you've got mouths to feed. But I think the very least you can do is to stop. Do not let people assume your political views, and do not self-censor. That's all. That's my pitch. Because, you know, the more you do it, the more and more ground these wokesters and these leftists are grabbing all the time. And I think what people do in their everyday life in terms of the school gates or, and in work is way more important than, you know, what we do. Sorry. That it's way, way more important.
What do they do in the school gate?
You know, again, the same kind of thing, you know, do people assume that you're pro-lockdown and pro-vaccine and blah, blah, blah. Well, if you're not, say so. And it comes up.
I see.
Yeah.
I see. I mean, that's where people should be making their stand.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know,
I think people find it quite exhausting.
Yeah, I get that. And I think you're right in that there's almost too much politics in people's lives. I'm not saying bring it up all the time, but I'm saying if someone else brings it up and assumes you support them 100% and you don't, you need to speak up. That would literally all I would be saying. I don't, you know, that's all I'm saying.
I think I'm more trying to explain why people don't do it. I mean, I think you and I are of a sort of feisty disposition. I mean, it really doesn't bother me particularly. I mean, I find it tiresome having to, at the beginning of every train journey, have to factor in not just how am I going to pass the journey without getting neck ache from looking at my screen. You know, have you noticed that? It's impossible even to read a book on a train without ending the day with a headache from your oh, position. Really? I don't know what it's about train seats. Yeah, well, maybe it's an old person.
I've been on the train in ages.
No. Well, I went on one. I'll tell you about my train journey. I have been avoiding the trains for the last 6 or 7 months because precisely that. I don't like having to be surrounded by maskers, you know, doing their mask thing, you know, whatever they do.
Yeah.
I like being in my car where I'm free. But I went on the train the other day and I was going to have lunch with somebody at Claridge's, and the train journey was absolutely fine. Everyone was wearing a mask apart from me. There was, you know, it's like 9 months ago, that wouldn't have been the case. Now everyone's just, they don't even think about it. And I went to Claridge's. And I thought, how am I going to cope in a hotel, in a posh hotel, where they're bound to come up to me and give me some sort of mark? You know, has Sir got a lanyard? Has Sir got a reason for not wearing his mask? And I went in there, and you know, and you're sort of you're all keyed up, ready for the confrontation.
Yeah.
And the guy with his top hat and his coat sort of like, you know, came through the revolving door. Nothing. No reaction at all to the fact I wasn't wearing a mask.
Yeah.
So I asked directions of the concierge. She's just, it's like I've got this enormous boil on, you know, not having a mask, I've got this enormous boil on the face, and you can expect everyone to say, oh God, that's a really bad boil, can I squeeze it, whatever. And I mean, nobody in the hotel mentioned it at all. They were absolutely brilliant. And I thought, that is good.
Yeah.
Whoever runs carriages, I want to give them a medal. I mean, maybe they're making enough. No, actually, they can't be making much money, can they?
No.
I mean, they can't even open anything. They can't.
No, I mean, are the restaurants open? Well, people can stay for business reasons, and people may well stretch.
Yes. So I ended up having lunch in the suite of the person who was staying there.
Right.
Which kind of wasn't what I was expecting. I was rather kind of hoping. For
so the restaurant something will be closed,
akin to grouse or something, you know, whatever you eat in Claridge. Obviously not this time of year, you wouldn't eat grouse, but I actually wanted calf's liver and I ended up having a club sandwich, which wasn't the same at all. But you can't have you can't have calf's liver on room service, can you? I mean, that's just wrong.
But does
you need it to be in a restaurant?
Was the restaurant open? No. It can be open
what
to
was
residents,
open,
surely.
There was a narrow corner. You know, probably an outside bit which is where you can squeeze into, and that was it. Mm-hmm. And it was a cold day.
Yeah, and the point about those places, obviously, in fact, the point of, I think, eating out anywhere is, you know, it's obviously the atmosphere and everything is set out so nicely. So even when we go back to, whatever it is, May this month, I think the 17th, you know, you're still not even going to get any cut really on the table. They're going to still throw that to you from across the kitchen, you know, which I find annoying, because the point about going to a restaurant, especially somewhere like Harrods, is that you go down and like it's just the table is set so nicely and, you know, the glasses are there and you get confused over which is my water and which is my wine. And oh, my God, yeah, what's this knife for? No, you're not going to get that. You're still going to get the nice tablecloth, admittedly. And then, yeah, people will still throw, catch your steak knife, please, because I don't want to get too close to you. And Boris says that if I put a steak knife on the table, what is the reason for them not setting the tables? Because you put a steak knife on the table, someone comes along, touches your steak knife, and then you're going to...
It's all nonsense, bollocks.
Right?
Bollocks, as you say.
Nonsense.
Absolute bollocks. So I must tell you another story, another thing I do. You know, I say I hate confrontation. No, I didn't say that. But
yeah.
on the way to Claridge's, I pass these chuggers. The chuggers are out. Chuggers, don't you?
Yeah.
And they represented, weirdly enough, the only time I have ever responded to chuggers, who I think are an absolute pain in the ass, but many years ago, we're probably talking two decades ago now, I was chugged by this charity called Concern, which I think is run by one of your lot.
So I did
a bit of research, and it seemed to me that Concern was not too disgustingly woke. You know, it didn't seem to have its political agenda wasn't so annoying that I could persuade myself that I was right not to give to it. So I ended up signing up to one of those deals. I must have given them thousands by now, because I haven't cancelled my thing.
But
here's the thing, Laura.
Yeah.
So it had the young people, typically young people with you know, with their Concern.
Yeah.
What are they called? Tabards.
Okay.
Concern tabards, probably. And they were wearing visors.
No.
And I went up to this young person, and it must be a very unusual event where a member of the public actually goes up to accost a chugger rather than the other way around. And I said to him, excuse me, why are you wearing one of those stupid visors? And he said, well, it means I can be heard more easily than if I were wearing a mask.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I said, but why are you wearing a visor? You're young. You've got a perfectly functioning immune system, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, he was all defensive. And I thought, like, he believed in all the crap. And I was thinking, this is part of our problem, that the young are not rebelling. The young are going along with this being
incredibly compliant. Can you imagine the baby boomers putting up with this when they were in their 20s? They would have burnt the place. They did burn the place down. I mean, that's literally what they did. Yeah, I know. I don't. They're very, very, very compliant.
These must be the children of boomers, mustn't they?
Grandkids, I think. Yeah. No. Grandkids. Not that the boomers actually had that many kids, of course. They are the ones that survived. But they're very conformist, very compliant. But look, again, as I said, I have more sympathy for them because they have zero power. They have no power and they have no money. Of course, not that.
And they've had no education either.
And they have had no education.
And universities. Over.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, their parents will have all been for it, and their grandparents. And the emotional blackmail is huge, right? I mean, you know, if you don't do this, you're going to kill your granny. It was very effective. And now they're running, going back to those stupid government ads, the propaganda ads. Now it's like, oh, getting tested will show that you have COVID. It also shows that you care about your family, you know. But if you don't get tested, you don't care about your family.
And have you seen these? You watch the adverts? Because I only saw one for the very first time. I saw a TV one the other night. Ooh. I was watching Sky, and I was just too lazy to press the fast forward thing. So I watched this advert, and it was about these friends who were sitting out in the garden. They're having a dinner party in the garden, freezing their asses off.
Yeah.
And the woman was thinking, I don't know whether you could hear her thoughts or something, and she was saying, oh, it's a bit cold. I wonder whether we should all go inside. But then luckily, her better nature ensured that she went and got a blanket. Otherwise, I reckon the friends would have been dead within 14 days.
Definitely.
All of them. And it would have been awful.
Yeah, even though most of them will have been vaccinated by the super duper magical vaccine. Yeah, no, I know it's in a way it's interesting. It is important in a way to at least watch some of them, because we are so sheltered from the mainstream media. This is you do now and again have to put yourself through the pain of educating yourself, of seeing what's out there. Because if you're watching that and you're watching the 10 o'clock news and you're seeing all this stuff from India, you know, you're completely on board. You're going to be totally on board. But it's...
Oh, yeah, you buy the India bollocks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So...
India is... We haven't even got onto it, India. No, I'm not sure we've really got... It's just too big a subject. But...
Yeah, yeah.
India, no, we are being played.
Yeah, I mean, it's also, again, look, you have to keep it in context. There's 1.3 billion people over there. You know, and the thing is, as usual, you know, if it goes badly in a country, it's wall-to-wall media coverage of that. If it went fine without a lockdown like Sweden or Florida or wherever, you don't hear a word. It's nothing. And who are we closer to culturally and in terms of having a health system? Sweden or India?
India.
Probably.
India. If you're talking about the NHS, I'd say the NHS is closer to India than Sweden. Or maybe Burkina Faso. I don't know.
Yeah. No, I mean...
Do they do TikTok videos in Burkina Faso hospitals? But apart from that, I think we're very like Burkina Faso or there Fernando Po.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, again, these ads are just... the propaganda, as he said, because all the papers are being paid for this and the Sky or whatever. Sky are one of the worst.
Well, they're owned by Comcast, which is communist.
Right, it's one of the few packages that we actually don't have. Also one of the worst. So look, what can you do? I mean, everybody, you know, is currently gripped by the green list.
Who presents on Sky, the fat stupid bloke,
Adam
Bolton. Yeah,
yeah, he's
Adam
bad.
Bolton. Adam Bolton.
Yes,
had the same education as me. He was taught. English.
Yeah.
At Christchurch, and he was taught by Peter Conrad. He was the most brilliant don of his generation. I mean, anyone who did English and got taught by Peter Conrad, it has basically been, it's by, like being given the golden ticket.
Right.
And Adam Bolton had the same tuition, and just, you look at him and you think, how can somebody be quite so achingly stupid? There is just no way. How did he get into Oxford? How did he, let alone get onto...
Maybe he was bright at the time, but obviously once you adopt the sort of the lockdown agenda, the woke agenda, you become more stupid. And I definitely think that that's true, because no one can make any, nobody seems to be able to analyze anything anymore or sort of.
No. It's like having an auto lobotomy, isn't it?
Yeah, point out even basic distinctions. And the problem is then when you argue with them over it, because the terms of reference are so different that you can't, there's actually just no point, you know, it's like arguing with a clown.
Did you see
the
footage of, ooh. I think I may have got the details wrong, but it looked to me like the president of Azerbaijan schooling one of your lot again, Orla Gerin. I think it was Orla Gerin.
Oh, yeah.
Sort of prettyish Irish correspondent.
Yeah, she's very well-known. She works at the BBC, though. She's not with Irish media. She works.
She's
with the BBC.
It's doing the rounds on Twitter, and it's great.
Yeah.
He just gives her both barrels, because she's trying to say, you're a foreign dictator and your human rights record is poor. And he says, hang on a second, Gerin. Well, if it is Orla Gerin, I imagine it is. I mean, she's very annoying, and I know Orla Gerin is very annoying. Maybe have you got other ones that were equally annoying?
I know her. There's another one. I mean, they're all annoying, right?
You've got to
admit,
there was nothing worse than a gobby, self-righteous Irish female foreign correspondent. I mean, it's about as bad as it gets.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I guess so. Well, all of, yes, yeah. No, I mean, yeah. I didn't see it. I'll look it up. But it is funny when they do that. I mean, for sure.
I think we're probably better round off now because it's coffee time and stuff. But this is another good thing that I've noticed about what's going on. We have found the most unlikely allies. I mean, you know, the guy in charge of Azerbaijan, the guy in charge, what's he called, Belarus guy.
All right.
Uh, Naomi Wolf. Who would ever imagine that I,
yes,
James, not feminist, Dellingpole, would be cozying up and to the point of inviting her to share his foxhole with Naomi Wolf.
Yeah,
I mean, it's
I think I'm a bit more cautious in terms of who I'm willing to cozy up with. It's fine if they're, I'm obviously happy, but I watch her. I'm genuinely going to watch it now.
You've got to watch her.
I'm going to start the lunch. But at the end of the day, if once this ends or sort of ends, if she, you know, she's still going to be a card-carrying, raging, pro-choice feminist, then the overlap with us.
Okay,
is
fair enough.
Because
who's your unlikely hero? Yeah.
Well, I'll do that. I was thinking to myself, though, and I wonder where it comes from you, is that, you know, why have I been so contrary or anti-lock, apart from the fact that it's obviously wrong? And, how come I am so immune from the media narrative? I just think, again, if you're socially conservative, you know, or if you're Catholic for the last 10 years, because the culture has changed so much, and you have ended up, I just think I knew early on that a lot of the media agenda are based on lies or are completely radical. So I've rejected it for like 10 years. So when this comes along, it's not a big leap of faith to realize that actually they are lying to you. So that would be my excuse. But in terms of, who's my unlikely ally?
Yes. Who surprised you, but you like them and you never imagined you would?
I don't know, because there's nobody I truly, I've lost them. Like, obviously, so Jacob Rees-Mogg I really liked, and now, I mean, you lose
he's
hero.
Dead to you.
Yeah, no, exactly.
He's dead to you. He's
dead to you. So I think it's more, I have very few people who I really, really, really like. I just find if someone is on the same side as me, I'm happy on a particular issue, it's good, but I'm always cautious because I know on the next issue they will probably oppose you. It's more who are the heroes you've lost, and there obviously have been many. But if they're in politics, you know, you should keep your heroes to an absolute minimum. So a lot of people have disappointed. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that we'd be here all day if we were doing the disappointments. Mm. I mean, that really is the list to end all lists.
I think. Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting. So, you know, to see a lot of the atheists on our side, that I find sort of interesting. So, you know, Julia Hartley Brewer and I'm trying to think who else. Well, she's the main one. But also sometimes.
Yeah, but she's not, to be fair, Julia is not actually in the foxhole. She's kind of probably in a chateau.
Oh, you see, she's not hard
down the road
for you. I think she's still pretty hardcore.
She's doing good work in the chateau, talking, you know, making a good case.
Yes.
Over her, you know, sort of Shasanya Morache and whatever. But I wouldn't say that she's mano a mano she's not smashing the butt of her rifle in the enemy's face every day.
I think I disagree with you, but I tell you what I did find interesting is that it's not just are you on the same side, it's why are, what are the reasons for you being on the same side? And we were kind of texting back and forth, and there was a big overlap in I think a lot of this, and a lot of people supported this, because there are a lot of what I would call either grouchy people. They just like squashing other people's fun, right? And
Nazis.
Well, no, Puritans.
And
you might say, but you might, like, as in people who are kind of happy that other, you know, Christmas was cancelled and stuff like that, which is, there's a lot of that out there. Or people be like, oh, who cares about your wedding? You know, I mean, you think you're so important and you want to have a wedding. You're like, actually, these are really important things. And actually having fun is genuinely important thing. And a lot of people think religious people are, as you said, more puritanical. And you're like, no, I mean, that was obviously a strand and gave us a bad reputation. But actually just taking joy in something, you know, being joyful on behalf of another person and celebrating that is a really, really important thing. I found that kind of interesting, and in that you definitely have to watch the the person who tries to spoil a party. There's a lot of those people out there. You know, the person who tries to, the grumpy uncle that tries to ruin the wedding and make it all about them. You may have had this going through your life.
Laura, I suddenly remembered.
Oh, go on.
Before we go, yeah. Somebody, I wish I could find his name. Somebody has made us into a sort of ambient sort of dance, techno track.
Oh, right.
I think they've incorporated one of your rants onto it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I must put up the details. Yeah. I think we should go now, because the problem is that it's coffee time and all sorts of stuff, and we've delighted them enough. We've given. Yeah, you must do that. Okay.
Yeah, do that.
So thanks everyone for listening. Don't forget, support me on Patreon, Subscribestar, and PayPal. I mean, if you can't be bothered to do the PayPal and the Subscribestar and Patreon, just go to dellingpoleworld.com and you can find out where to do it. And it's good. Thank you, Laura.
No problem.
Have a lovely day and keep being pregnant and don't take the vaccine.
No,
and
I won't take the vaccine.
All right.
Okay, take it easy, James.
Good.
Bye.
Bye.